You're storing memories to lose them again. You'll forget everything when this whole thing ends. You can't even predict what tomorrow brings. But don't lose track of living in the present.
Welcome to the Memory Distillery, everyone. I'm Anthony Verneri.
And I'm John Hoke Deck, and each week we will malt, mash, ferment, and distill our way through the spirits of our past in the form of long-loved movies.
And this week...
Shut up! You're killing me, Smalls.
That's right, we're continuing our summer fun with The Sandlot from 1993, directed by David Mickey Evans. John.
Yes.
When's the last time you saw this?
Oh, it's been a while. I'm a little nervous because I know a lot of people who just love this movie. And I'm not saying that I have negative feelings towards it, but I haven't seen it for a very, very long time. And I don't have that same classic connection that so many people seem to have with it. So this will be interesting. I'm hopeful. But I'm also a little bit scared. What if I come out the other end being all bitter and angry?
What if? Yep. Like, that would be terrible.
How about you?
So it's been probably about 5 years since I've seen this. I introduced my son to it on my last viewing. That would have been 5, maybe 6 years ago. I did love it. I still love it. I still regard it as a great kind of coming of age sports movie. Something that's fun to reminisce about and to introduce your kids to. Like my son loved it. He had a great time watching it. Still super quotable. The aforementioned "You're killing me, Smalls." The forever, like there's all these lines in here. They're just so quotable. It's a fun movie. I really, I can't wait to watch this again. This has been probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest, spans of time since I last watched it. Between watchings, I can't remember ever going this long. I probably would have watched it at some point, but then we started doing this podcast, and I was like, oh, I gotta hold off on watching all these movies that I used to love because we're gonna do it for the show one day, and it's like, well, I need to watch something.
Day.
Today is that day, or this week is that week. We're gonna go and watch it. It's currently streaming on Disney Plus, and I don't know if it's streaming anywhere else, but if you have Disney Plus, that's
I think
all
it's on
really
Prime, but I don't know. I'm going to watch it on Disney. So,
Okay. So, might be on Prime. You guys know how to find movie. Go to justwatch.com. You can find everything you want there. When we come back, we're talking The Sandlot. John, are you ready?
Yes.
Then let's do it.
You know, if my dog was as ugly as you, I'd shave his butt and tell him to walk backwards.
Welcome back, everybody. John, initial thoughts. I know you were saying up top that you didn't have necessarily the fondest memories of this movie. You didn't hate it, but you didn't really love it either. How are you feeling now? Are you still sort of in that camp, or do you feel like maybe you've turned a corner in one direction or the other? Do you hate this now? Do you love it now? What's on your mind?
I think that at the highest level, I'll say that I can very much understand people loving this movie, that it certainly wasn't bad. I enjoyed watching it. I didn't have a very deep emotional connection to it, but I suspect that there's other elements of nostalgia and time built into the movie and quoting it and having friends who like it and all that stuff, like that could be part of it. Plus, I don't really have as much of a connection to that, you know, the summer of baseball, the growing up playing sports with your friend, like that. I don't connect to that personally, but all that being said, it was fun. A well-made summer movie, you know, a great little, like as they say, coming of age story. No, it was funny. It was, you know, a little, I don't know, cheesy, or I guess you could say, but like it, like in a wink and a nod kind of way, like you're just expecting it and you can just roll with it and enjoy it. So yeah, it was a positive experience. Definitely, had fun with it, but I didn't feel like this is it. Oh my God, I found it. This is the movie.
Well, it's funny you say, that you didn't have the connection, as far as like, you know, summer baseball and going out with your friends and playing sports and stuff like that. I didn't necessarily have a ton of that either. Like there were times where, you know, the neighborhood kids would get together and we like go out into a field and play baseball or kickball or something. But on the whole, like I spent a lot of time at the pool or I was, you know, playing Nintendo. So it wasn't a whole lot of that for me either, but this did come about during an era of kind of frequent kid-oriented sports films. Like you had this, you had Mighty Ducks and Ladybugs and Little Giants and Rookie Bingo and Rookie of the Year. There's a ton of them out there.
Bad News Bears.
They all came out in like a, yep.
Wait, that was like 30 years before it.
Well, yeah. but there were a whole bunch that came out in like a 3 or 4 year span, and it was like, wow, this is really cool. But then like looking back on it now, there wasn't sort of the equivalent for maybe kids who weren't super athletically inclined. And so a lot of us got sort of left off the train there, as it were. All that to say, I still really enjoyed this movie. My wife and I watched it last night. We were quoting it the whole time and laughing and we had a great time of it. Still a lot of fun to watch, but there were some elements to it that, again, like we do this all the time. We look at it through the memory distillery lens, and it's like, wow, there's stuff here that I couldn't see us doing now. Like, there were these sort of misogynist things that they were saying, or like Squints, you know, grabbing and kissing the girl without really, like, you know, under false pretenses. And it's like, this isn't really cool. And then you have to sort of give it the, well, it's a movie made in 93 about 63 and or 62 or I forget what year they're in this movie, but it's in the 60s. And it's like, it's made during a time and depicting a time where a lot of these kinds of tropes and depictions and things were very much considered okay, or at least like semi-acceptable, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's always tricky, but even with this, it was very much like, even in all of those contexts, it was like still acknowledged as a bad thing. He got banned from the pool forever. They were like, oh my God, like I can't believe he did this. Is, oh, and you're kind of like cringing, but then, you know, it's like he did it. And so it, you don't, just having content in a movie is not necessarily saying we love this, we want everyone to do this is the best. And so, like, I think sometimes it can kind of tiptoe around that line. And so for me personally, I didn't feel that, like, oh, I'm going to have to just close my eyes and nod my head and be like, that, well, this was the, you know, the 90s. Things were different, even if they were. It didn't quite feel so, like, crossing that line to me. But, it you know, to each their own. I think we've been rapidly shifting, you know, in our social connections and how we communicate. So I could see things becoming that way. Like, especially you go a decade back and, you know, look in the 80s, and that's when I think you really hit so much language that's just, to me right now, almost hurts. Like, it's like, ew, ow, ew. You know, so So this was enough where it didn't quite trigger me in any way, and it stayed on for the vast majority of the movie, stayed in that realm of you know, more harmless nostalgia. So I enjoyed that. In fact, it's funny because watching the movie, like, there were definitely three other movies that came to mind. Not saying I was trying to figure out what other movie is this like, but involuntarily I kept thinking of this. If you took out the actual plot and the content, but the feel of how the movie was organized and how it was told and how it felt, it was kind of like a combination of A Christmas Story and Stand By Me and The Goonies.
I knew you were going to bring in Stand By Me.
Well, yeah.
No, I very much got that feeling as well. But I want to go back to something real quick because there's a quote, there's a line of dialogue from the narrator of this movie, and I just want to read it because it's, you said that the kissing thing wasn't considered to be okay in the context of the movie. I just want to read this because there's one person in this film who disagrees with you, and it's the narrator. Michael Squints Palidorus walked a little taller that day, and we had to tip our hats to him. He was lucky that she didn't beat the crap out of him. We wouldn't have blamed her. What he'd done was sneaky, rotten, and low. And cool. Not another one among us would have ever in a million years, even for $1 million, have had the guts to put the move on the lifeguard. He did. He had kissed a woman, and he had kissed her long and good. We got banned from the pool forever that day, but every time we walked by after that, the lifeguard looked down from her tower right over at Squints and smiled.
So, well, and the fact that have them end up getting married and having 9 kids.
Right, and like, I get that too, but it's still, like, in the moment, it was very much to me, like, this isn't good. Anyway. No, I agree with you. There's a lot of feel to this of other movies. You said Stand By Me, which I agree with you on. The Goonies, definitely. The whole group dynamic, absolutely. And what was the other one that you had said?
Christmas Story.
Oh, yeah, Christmas Story with the narration, absolutely.
And maybe that's just it. Yeah, it's that combination of the group of kids, the young group of kids, and the narration, like those elements where, and even in like Christmas Story, where you have some of his daydreaming fantastical stuff that doesn't happen in this movie, but elements with the beast, with Hercules, have that over the top,
larger, you know, than life, like,
yeah, like in a hilarious way. I found it to be pretty funny. Like, they could have tried to pass it off as a serious, you know, comedy thing, you know, like where it's like, yeah, this is dangerous because it's a crazy dog. But like, when it first starts, he casts the shadow of a dinosaur on the fence, and like, and then when he like throws back the metal contraptions and stuff, it's like like the whole building it up and stuff, it struck me as the way, like, when people tell stories about the past, how things just get bigger and more flamboyant and maybe don't always stick to the truth, but, you know, it's more fun that way, that kind of mentality.
Sure. Yeah. Storytelling is an age old art, and sometimes you got to embellish a little bit. The way that they regarded Hercules, especially like the deference and fear, it was really cool how they stuck to it right up until they couldn't anymore. Like, they, once they showed Hercules and chasing Benny and like the fence falling, like he becomes a very mortal creature. But the entire time before that, the way that they just like, oh no, it's Hercules, it's the beast, and he's gonna eat the, you know, he eats balls and shit like that, and it's like, it's very much, you know, the urban legend sort of thing, and they even touch on it again when Mr. Myrtle. Yeah, Mr. Myrtle, James Earl Jones, is like, why didn't you just come knock on the door? I would have went and got the ball for you. And they're like hitting squints because of the story that he told earlier about how mean Mr. Myrtle is.
But I mean, as much as that is blown up, I feel like that does resonate as true, you know, with kids. You know, it's always, I don't know about you, but there was always stories about that lady at the end of the block, or that the house that's haunted, or,
oh sure,
you know, that kid that beat someone up so bad that he went to prison. And like, not that he beat the kid up so bad that the kid that was beaten up went to prison, because I don't know how that would work at all. but yeah, so it's like that, the old stories, the grown up, and whether it's just passed down, it's that lineage of looking back to our ancient ancestors and getting around a campfire and telling the stories about the time the beast ate our baseball.
Exactly. It's weird, right? How those sorts of urban legends and tales kind of come into light, especially back then, like it predating the internet. Like, there were so many things that got around, and you have no idea how it happened, but they just spread. They spread like wildfire. Like the urban legend, like Pop Rocks and Coke will, you know, if you eat Pop Rocks and drink Coke, your stomach will explode. And everybody had a friend whose cousin, you know, her boyfriend did it, and he died, and or you know, the very vicious rumor of Richard Gere with a particular rodent, that whole thing, you know, it seemed to be everywhere all at once. And it's like, how did this stuff get around so quickly without, you know, the internet? There weren't message boards of people spreading disinformation.
It's pretty remarkable the way information was relayed in that sense. I think, you know, from the dawn of time, we've had that propensity to try to control the narrative, and whether that's done on a nefarious, large, controlling scale, or if it's just image management amongst a group of friends, whatever it is, like telling stories and being a part of that process, you know, has been around forever. And of course, you can go back to however far you want, just the idea of telling stories alone. But I'm specifically for this whole idea of like spreading rumors and having urban cowboys. I don't know.
Yeah, urban cowboys.
But yeah, so it is, but that is a really good point to think about, like pre-internet, how did it go so quickly? Because you're right, it was just like these universal stories that so many people knew and heard and repeated, or at least believed to be true. And it's like now, yeah, I guess you kind of have the era where you can do your own research and you can look at Snopes and you can do this stuff. Or on the reverse side, you have the immediate snowballing echo chamber of, you know, building up a tolerance to just believing things that come from a group of people that you believe in or trust. So it's like everything is kind of the same, just more extreme and faster. But yeah, it is quite something to know that those rumors, those stories, and those ideas were very universal and like held throughout, you know, different areas, different countries probably.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Much of this film, nearly all of it except for the Dodger Stadium scenes, filmed here in Utah, not far from where I live. Lots of locations along the Wasatch Front. Fun small little anecdote about it, actually. The scene where Benny shows up at Scott's house to go play night games, and they're running through the neighborhood, and that block party is going on. My current next door neighbor lived on that street and is in that scene. He's one of the dads. He was having a barbecue with his family, and they were like, "Yep, we're gonna film here." And he's like, "Okay." So they're all like, you know, all the houses on the block got together and they filmed it, and it was cool. He told me that I think the last time that I watched it, because I happened to mention it to him that I had watched The Sandlot, and he was like, "Oh, I was in that." And I'm like, "Yeah, all right." And he's like, "No, I really was." He told me the story, and I was like, "Holy shit, that's crazy." So yeah, that's that's pretty neat little bit of information.
Now wait, now are you testing me? Is this a callback to where you're just talking about how we just like believe these rumors and all this stuff? And
no, so yeah, I don't know. Maybe is it?
I guess I'll just have to do my own research.
I guess you will have to do your own research. I don't know. Not. I don't know how that would prevail.
I'm too tired. I don't want to do anything.
I don't either.
Don't make me think. I'll just believe you.
Any particularly favorite scenes or moments in this movie? Anything that you enjoyed or a favorite character? Anything?
I mean, it's hard to say. I would say, like, the main relationship between Smalls and Benny. Benny, is that his name?
Yeah, Benny.
Yeah. Like, I think that type of connection has a certain purity to it and a certain element of, like, if anything was going to trigger some pleasant feeling that was adjacent to nostalgia, which, not in the most literal sense, but in that good feeling just welling up inside you, for me, it was triggered by the idea of a person looking out for another person, especially when one of them is obviously, you know, a bit, you know, whatever, insert your adjective here, but he was clearly a fish out of water, and just moved there. And that you had Benny, the, you know, the undoubted, you know, undeniable leader of this group, take him under his wing and just see something in him. Yeah, he needed a ninth player and that meant something, but that the way he, just in his body language and the way he, you know, stood up for him and brought him in. And even when there's one scene, where when it's revealed that he just had grabbed this ball, you know, by some lady. And you know that, and when they figure out that it was signed by, you know, Babe Ruth, and how they are like freaking out, and he's like, he comes to confess or realize or understand that he has no idea who this person is. And like, while everybody's like in pain and being like, what? Oh my God, how do you not know? Ah, and they're freaking out. And Benny is kind of doing that too, but he also has his hand like on his shoulder, you know, like in this reassuring gesture.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like he's like slapping his head or something, or shaking his head, but at the same time he's got his hand on him, you know. So it's like, you're in a tough spot, we got your back, but oh, I can't believe this, you know, like. But I like
of that all the baseballs you could have grabbed,
but like the realism of combining a bunch of immature kids being the way kids are, but then having someone who's either just a little bit older or a little bit more mature stepping into that role, like, that's something that always kind of hits me in a certain way. So I think that element really, to me, was the strongest part of the movie.
Well, and that that's a great element that to pick. And in particular in this movie, it's very well acted. Like, you don't necessarily get that kind of acting chops out of kids, and even more so generally unknown actor kids.
Yeah, and to think that, like, almost none of them went on to do a ton of more acting. None of them became super famous. Like, they just had kind of, like, hit it and quit it. You know, like, I know a few of them have done other things because I recognize them, but, like, you know, you have other movies like Stand By Me, and it's like virtually everyone in it was, you know, went on to either die or be in other things, or, you know, whatever. And like, so
that wasn't dark at all.
Or both. Hey, that's life.
Yeah, no, it is funny that, and it's very, I don't know. It was a very enjoyable thing to me to see that, because it's rare that you get a group of kids together for a film and they have that kind of chemistry that they can relate to one another in such a way in the script and in the depiction of it that it comes across. So
I was going to say one other thing that I have to mention. Just because I was just gushing about the soundtrack for Dirty Dancing. I have a different reaction, different feeling with The Sandlot in that it was good. I enjoyed it. But what I really liked and really appreciated was not this universal soundtrack of like 14 great songs that all fit every moment perfectly, as much as I really liked, and I don't know if this was, I'm sure it was on purpose, but they picked songs in the soundtrack that were woven into the movie that were also almost completely instrumentals. And so.
Yeah, Tequila, Wipeout.
Yeah, Green Onions. And they're good songs. They fit the mood. They're great, but they're also like almost cheating the score. Like the score itself, nothing impressive to me. It didn't hurt anything, but it didn't help anything.
I couldn't hum a note from it.
Right, exactly. And maybe that was their intent, but I do remember, you know, Wipeout was playing as they were running, and like, you know, like they really connected those moments. So. Kudos to them on that.
Yeah, speaking of Tequila, that scene was great with them all with the chewing tobacco and on the ride and spitting out and throwing up. I was losing it the whole time. Like that was still so funny to me. Still speaking of the cast, some pretty shining stars in this. Like this is probably one of the earliest films I had seen Dennis Leary in. I had forgotten that Karen Allen played the mom.
Yeah, it's like
it had completely like bypassed me. And then looking at her, I go, man, she looks familiar. How do I know her? And then it clicked with me like 10 minutes into the movie. I'm like, oh shit, that's fucking Karen Allen.
Yeah, the elders of the movie, certainly they spared no expense at getting, you know, some, well, like you said, Dennis Leary, right. It's not like he had done much at the time, but, you know, getting James Earl Jones in there and get, you know, like, so they kind of locked that down. Yeah. And then the kids were like, meh. It seemed almost like a, you know, throwaway kind of thing. But again, like you mentioned, they all did a rather good job for kid actors. And so, you know, one more kudos this time to the casting agency or whoever handled all the bringing in the scores of kids until they found the right ones for this, because they did a good job.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, Patrick Renna is actually still around a little bit, I think. I don't know that he acts too much anymore, but I see him on like social media all the time. He was Glow. He was in two episodes of Glow. How about that?
There you go.
What else you got, John?
I've hit all the vital organs, I think. If that's the phrase people use, right?
I've hit all the vital organs. Let's bury this thing.
I am very much a human being. I just realized
that was convincing.
I've been following, you know, because this again, I hate to get off topic, but the various conversations about AI and with, you know, with Elon and with a few other realms where, you know, people are saying, yeah, these AI bots are gaining sentience and consciousness, and it's going to be just a matter of years before it spreads and all this stuff. So I've been reading and watching interviews and quotes and just because I'm not, because I actually have a very strong feeling one way or another, but I find the whole thing intriguing, at least. And it is interesting. I probably don't quite have the same dire outlook, but hey, you know, 2 years from now when I'm, you know, huddled in an underground bunker hiding from drones, who will have the last laugh then? But that's, I just laugh. Sometimes I make comments and then I realize I don't know if I could fool someone where they would just think that I was probably AI or some kind of a bot just because of the way I talk sometimes. So who are we to say that other robots are failing at those conversations.
That's true. That's a great point. Speaking of AI and stuff like that, have you seen these DALL-E images that people are posting all over the internet? There's this AI bot that you can type text into, and it will generate images based on that.
Oh,
text.
Yeah.
These images are some of the most off-putting, cursed, uncanny valley, like, horrors that you've ever seen in your entire life.
Well, and now terrible. I know what we need to post on our Facebook page for this episode. Get some Sandlot renditions.
Just type in "You're killing me, Smalls," and let's see what comes out. It'll be terrible, I promise. Every image I've seen of a human being comes out looking like something out of a fucking a fever dream from, you know, George Romero or Wes Craven. It's just,
see, I thought you'd be into that.
You know, you'd think, but when it's presented before you without more context than you typed this into the internet and this is what you get back, and I didn't like pay to see a horror film, I'm done. I don't want to deal with it. It's terrible to look at. They're absolutely horrifying.
Well, that kind of endorsement.
please don't spam us with it. It would drive me insane. Anyhow, that's our show, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to us every week as we steal another favorite from our past. We have new episodes on Mondays, so come and check us out on Apple and Spotify and Stitcher and all those various podcast apps. You can also head over to our website. That's what I was going to say, tmdpod.com. All of our information is there. And yeah, we're going to continue with our summer of fun.
Yeah, so, you know, some people like music. Some people like AI-generated portraits based upon algorithms, and they give you nightmares. Some people like emailing. Now, I'm going to help you with two of the three of those things by letting you know that the music in our podcast comes from the song Destroying the Evidence by Semaphore. So check, got the music element knocked out. Nice. Now, this whole procedurally generated horror show images, you all are going to have to do the legwork on that one. I'm not going to spoon-feed it to you. But if you want to email us, technically there's your loophole. Send us a message at thememorydistillery@gmail.com asking, how do I get myself into this fanciful hobby? And then we're kind of forced to walk you through it. So you feel free to do that. But as always, we love the idea of you sending us any questions, comments, notes, anything you think it would be vital for us to get into the summer of fun. It's not too late. We have ideas. We have things loosely planned out. But if someone passionately reaches out and says, this has got to happen, we'll definitely weigh that. So feel free to reach out to us, or even just hop on Facebook and look at the Memory Distillery, because we will post at least one creepy picture there this week. And hey, isn't that what life's all about? So thanks again for listening. I'm John Hokek.
And I'm Anthony Veneri, and this has been the Memory Distillery.
Breakfast geek, you mixed your weeds with your mama's toe jam.
Yeah.